This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Michael Colgan as my special expert guest. Dr. Colgan is one of the world's most popular scientific experts in nutrition. He is a best-selling author and travels the world lecturing on topics related to anti-aging, sports nutrition, human performance, and hormonal health. Dr. Colgan has a distinguished reputation for expertise in sports nutrition science and functional fitness, and is an advisor to hundreds of elite athletes. His many books include Prevent Cancer Now, Optimum Sports Nutrition, The New Nutrition, Hormonal Health, Your Personal Vitamin Profile, The New Power Program, and his latest release, The Sports Nutrition Guide, Minerals, Vitamins, and Antioxidants for Athletes. Dr. Colgan was the first recipient of the CHFA Sports Nutrition Hall of Fame Award in 2002, and his texts and research are utilized throughout the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, which has set a new international standard in sports nutrition education. Michael, it's great to have you on SNU, and it's wonderful to have you on board to help celebrate our first anniversary.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Corey. That was a great introduction, I must say.
Well, you're a great man, and you've made such wonderful contributions to the art and science of sports nutrition, so it's good to have you on SNU. Let's talk about the Colgan Institute for just a moment. What goes on at the Institute, and exactly what role do you play?
Well, we do a variety of research projects, both formal and popular, on aging and sports nutrition and on sports performance. We have places in San Diego and Los Angeles, and of course my little lecturing retreat facility on Salt Spring Island in British Columbia. We do a lot of lectures and publish books and newsletters, and I guess that about covers it.
You also engage with athletes on a personal level, don't you?
Oh, yes. We do individual assessments of athletes and do individual programs for them and also individual anti-aging programs. In fact, we have a power program for athletes and an anti-aging program for the general public on Salt Spring Island, four-day intensives in July and August this year.
And you've also been a consultant to many different high-profile suppliers and manufacturers.
Oh, that's right. Yes, we've done a lot of consultancy work with companies designing nutritional products.
And like with TwinLab, that comes to mind, for example, a lot of people know about your connection through Optimum Sports Nutrition.
Yes.
Now, in Canada, I know that you've been interacting with a number of companies.
Right.
So lots going on out there.
Too much.
So sports nutrition is one of the fastest growing categories of the health food industry. Do you think it's finally catching on in the mainstream?
Yes, I think it is, Corey. Not because the mainstream is becoming more sports-oriented, but because a lot of the innovation in nutritional products and in a lot of advances in nutrition have come through sports nutrition. We are understanding much more about how the immune system works, understanding much more of how the brain works because of that quest for optimum performance of athletes. Rather than studying the sick, that is, after the body has become damaged and decayed, studying healthy people gives us a better insight into the way the body works. And the sort of products that people take in nutrition are primarily, or should be primarily, to prevent disease, because that's the role of nutrition, to build a better body. And I believe because the athlete is always seeking that the most innovative research is done in sports nutrition, which is spread to the mainstream as a means of preventing the degeneration of aging and maintaining a vital body for life.
So sports nutrition isn't just for people that play sport?
No, I don't think so. I think that's why it's spread into the mainstream.
Now, in your new sports nutrition guide, Minerals, Vitamins, and Antioxidants for Athletes, you state that the way energy is transferred from food to our body bears little resemblance to the schoolboy story of calorie burning.
Yes.
If the calorie paradigm is a fable, meaning our bodies don't burn anything.
Right.
Can you explain what really happens and why this information isn't well known?
Well, it really stems from that schoolboy fairy tale. It's taught to children to keep things simple. And I lectured at a number of universities, as you know, and it's a bane of teachers like myself at a graduate level of university that you have to overcome that false learning. You have to undo it before you can teach real science. I mean, science is so far removed from what the, as I've put it before, what politicians and the madding crowd believe, that it's very difficult to find a point to start with. But simply put, calories are a measure of the heat that is produced when food is burned in an instrument called a bomb calorimeter. Now, a bomb calorimeter can't tell the difference between an apple, which will nourish human life, and a turd, which will not. They both will burn, and they will both produce caloric values. In fact, we used to, when I was at college, we used to take rat turds from the rat lab and burn them in the calorimeter and then solemnly record their caloric values. The human body doesn't work like that. It's not a bomb calorimeter. It doesn't burn anything. It's only marginally related to the notion of calories, as anybody who's tried to lose weight by counting them quickly discovers. Some 30 years ago, I was a research fellow working in the obese ward in Wellington Hospital in New Zealand, and I watched day by day and took the measurements of obese people that continued to have fat proliferating on their body when they were just miserably existing on enough calories just to support them, 1,200 calories a day, and yet they continued to gain weight. So, you know, the science is quite different. The human body works by nuclear power. And you've got a very nice diagram of what's called the energy cycle in your course. And it shows simply that the stored energy, which comes, of course, from the sun to plants and plants to us, the stored energy is released from plant foods by a complex process of electron transfer, which occurs at the inner membrane of the mitochondrion of the cell. It doesn't burn anything. It's a nuclear process. And once you get this process working properly, it requires very little food to maintain a healthy body. It's got nothing at all to do with the caloric value of food. But unfortunately, when people are taught as children simple stories, they grow up believing them, and they become what they know and administrators know. And it's very difficult for scientists to then unteach that stuff.
So basically, we have to detoxify the minds of, you know, the majority of people in society.
Well, anyone who's done, say, graduate physics is quite aware of all of this, and certainly graduate physiology. And, you know, we know very well that humanity grows by eating plants. And plants, a lot of people, of course, are taught again, simple thing, the common belief that plants grow from soil and are made mostly of dirt. And any elementary physics text will show you how this belief is false too. In fact, if you want to see plants growing very well without dirt, you can go to the Epcot Center, where they grow all their vegetables hydroponically with no soil at all, using only water containing a tiny little smidgen of minerals dissolved in it. And that's all that plants seek in the dirt. Their structure is composed mostly of nitrogen and carbon dioxide, which they extract from the air, and light, which they gather. The electromagnetic field of a plant gathers photons of light, stores it in its structure, and it's made mostly of light and gas. When that food is eaten by us, it transfers that energy as hydrogen ions to our body. And by a nuclear process, the body produces adenosine triphosphate, which is the energy molecule, and locks that energy of light up in it temporarily. And then by firing off one of the phosphates, the light is released as pure energy. That's how it works. And anyone who studied physics knows that. But that's not what the what is generally out there in the health food industry and certainly amongst the general public. And the weight loss industry, of course, that keeps that as a keeps the idea of calories as a sacred truth because they want the customers to come back for more. They don't want to be successful. It would be silly if they were.
So when you choose food and you're not thinking in terms of a calorie paradigm, what measure do you use? Like when you look at food or make a decision about what to eat, what's going on in your mind?
Well, we know that the food, the transfer of light to the plant, and of course this includes our food animals too because they all grow by eating plants. When naturally grown, the food animals are simply plants one step removed, which is why they're generally not as good nourishment as plants. But we know that if the plant is degraded in any way, if the soil is contaminated, if the air is contaminated, then you get a degraded plant. It does not grow as well. It doesn't store the light energy as well, and it cannot transfer it as well to our flesh. It's a simple message. It comes down to, from a purely scientific point of view, what people from a folksy point of view have been saying for many, many years, that you have to eat organically grown plants as close to the ground they came from as possible. And that's the basis of human life.
So you're thinking in terms of quality.
Quality is all it's about, core quality. If you don't base your diet on quality, then you can take all smart supplements you like, but you cannot protect your body.
So a glass of Coke might have the same amount of calories as, say, a glass of carrot juice, but when we look at the biochemistry, the micronutrient density, the quality of the substance, you're getting an entirely different effect when you consume the substance.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, we now have most of our meat is what I call battery-bred animal grotesques. Most commercial poultry and cattle and pork and farmed fish, that is plants several steps removed because they're fed mainly on offal and garbage grains, and they provide very inferior nourishment. But they may provide exactly the same number of calories as good food. And the processed pap that lines the supermarket shelves is plants numerous steps removed. It provides little nourishment at all, but provides lots of calories.
So getting over this calorie paradigm is a huge obstacle. And once we do that, we're moving forward at light speed.
Oh, yes. Once you get the electron transfer system working properly in the body, then the idea of, you know, gaining fat and losing fat and gaining muscle and losing strength as you age, all of those ideas go out the window. Your body is maintained magnificently without any effort. I have spoken, of course, to a lot of politicians about these things, and all I can say is it's very difficult to undo the fables that just proliferate in our society. For example, caloric values of foods were thought to be so important by health officials that they're on food labels, and yet they mean very little.
Very good point. Very well said, Michael. Now, in Chapter 44 of your new book, you discuss the benefits of creatin, and a lot of us are using it and taking it, and a lot of people have, you know, some issues about it. You use lean mass as opposed to total body weight. You see labels that don't distinguish the difference.
Right. Well, you can take two people. What you're trying to do with creatine is increase the creatine phosphate in the muscle, because what creatine does is it sort of tops up the muscle's creatine phosphate so that what's called the adenosine triphosphate creatine phosphate shuttle, ATP-CP shuttle in physiologic terms, can work more efficiently. And that is the regeneration of ATP by creatine. That only applies to muscle. Fat, you can have two people who are one who weighs 200 pounds and one who weighs 150 pounds, and they can have exactly the same muscle. So it's muscle or lean mass that can actually use the creatine, not fat. So there's no reason to take creatine in terms of your fat weight.
So before you take creatine, you should determine your lean body mass.
Yes.
And that's best done how?
Well, you can do it in a variety of ways. We use a near-infrared device that the U.S. meat inspectors use for measuring the fat in cattle on the hoof. And that's the reason it's not super accurate. The only super accurate method, you can do underwater weighing, but that's not a super accurate either. The only super accurate method is whole body tomography using a whole body scanner. But it's accurate enough for us to determine a change in body fat of, say, 1%.
So once we determine our lean body mass, then you also have a formula that helps people understand how much exactly to take, whether they want to load or just use a daily dose.
Right. Yeah, the whole thing about creatine is when people have not used it, then there are variable levels of creatine in the muscle. And there is a reason for trying to load it. Now, most of the creatine in the loading phase will be dumped by the body, but you will ensure that you actually get your muscles loaded up. And that's the reason for that loading phase where you take a large amount of creatine. But then to keep it topped up doesn't require very much. And it's a good thing not to take too much because of various things. First of all, the body will start to adapt to the creatine. Second, you put a load on the kidneys. And third, there is some evidence that excessive creatine upsets the mineral balance in muscles and may contribute to cramps, muscle pulls, etc.
But your key word there was excessive.
Excessive, yes. With a right amount of creatine, I think you can continue to gain for a certain period of time, gain strength, and then you'll see it tails off, and that's about the time to stop the creatine for a while, so give the because the body is adapted to it.
Now, there's a lot of different forms of creatine on the market, things like liquid, effervescent, citrate, pyruvate. What's your take on all this stuff, and what type of creatine do you recommend?
Well, we use the monohydrate primarily because most of the research has been with the monohydrate. You know, being a wily old chemist from way back, I know that you only have to change the form of something a little bit, and it has an enormously different effect in the body. And also, there are claims that, for instance, effervescent creatine is absorbed more readily than creatine monohydrate powder. There's no truth to those claims because creatine is absorbed pretty well anyway. And when you take even a maintenance amount of creatine after you've loaded, a lot of it is dumped straight away because the body doesn't need it. So absorption is not a critical factor, but it's something that's used as a selling point.
Taking advantage of the consumer's ignorance.
Right, and liquid is the same, you know.
And is stability in liquid still a factor? Is there any evidence that you can stabilize creatine in liquid?
Well, I don't like it because, again, being a wily old chemist, and people say stabilized creatine in liquid, creatine is not a very stable substance. So I just say, well, they might have got some chemical trick, but what else have they done to the creatine by putting that chemical trick in there?
So the trick is to know exactly what it is you're doing, understand the benefits of creatine, use your lean body mass, and take it appropriately and follow the science.
I think so. And you know, Corey, because you've used it some time and you've put on a ton of muscle mass since I first knew you.
I know. It's to me, it's just a godsend. I love this stuff and use it as a staple.
Right.
Take it after the workout. That's another important issue, too. You see a lot of people, I get a lot of emails, I'm sure you do too, Michael, about like when the best time is. I advocate using it after training.
I think that's a pretty good time to use it, yes. You have that critical super absorptive phase in the body after you've depleted the muscle somewhat, and you might get a little extra by hitting it at that time.
And when you carb replete, like when you utilize carbohydrates after training to replete the glycogen, don't
right.
you also elevate insulin, and doesn't that
sure,
indirectly
yes.
act as a kind of an insulin transport advantage?
Well, absolutely. That's the whole business of the critical post-workout hour. It's still a secret to a lot of people. They don't realize it. They don't realize how good it is.
Well, something I picked up from you, which is marvelous too, and kind of a secret that a lot of people don't understand, is this taking up to 25% of your protein post-workout.
Yes.
You know, that's part of my secret that's helped me get the advantage is just loading up on whey protein isolate. It's so soluble and it moves in so smoothly and nicely. So in a liquid post-workout shake, you can take much more than perhaps you could at any other time. Isn't that right?
I think so. And my gosh, you're a great example of it, Corey.
Well, now you've got another great book out there on posture, and I've learned as a hammer thrower the importance of core training and just right. as a human being how important posture is.
Yeah.
It's called Perfect Posture, the Basis
yes.
of Power.
Yes. The key to that is whenever you stand with any of your body mass outside the balanced vertical axis, the moment of inertia around that axis increases. Now, that's a little bit of physics, but essentially, you have to make a greater effort to move if any of your body mass is outside the vertical axis. And if you are outside the vertical axis and you want to move in a different direction, your body has to pass through that vertical axis before you can do it. So on two counts, not having a good posture loses you a tremendous amount of power. And, of course, as you know, the power program I developed, one of the key variables is train your body from the inside out. Train for function. And the first thing to do is to train your posture so that you can actually stand up straight.
Now, what are some of the specific exercises you recommend for improving posture?
Well, the key start is to get a strong core. That is the transverse abdominis, which holds your gut in. I mean, a lot of people, their gut hangs out of the vertical axis, and that is a very much waste of power. When you see anyone with a hanging gut, you know that that is not a powerful person. Might be a big, bluff, sort of hearty guy or something, but if the gut's hanging out there, they can't move with power. They've got to move that gut through their vertical axis before they can move anywhere else. First thing is to train the inner muscles of the back and the muscles that hold up the gut, which is the transverse abdominis and the internal and external obliques. And then there's one other thing that you have to train, and that is the muscles that hold up the pelvic floor. And people think of the pelvis as a bowl. Well, it isn't actually. It's a tube, the sort of widened, a flared top with a big hole underneath, which is six sets of muscles cross that hole. Women know it very well because of childbirth, and they get laxity in those muscle groups. And I've said rather unkindly, that's what's led to the large industry in diapers for older women, because they have lost what holds their gut up. So the gut's all the time pressing on their bladder. And so those are the first things you have to train. The iliocostalis and longissimus muscles of the back, and the muscles of the pelvic floor and the transverse abdominis and the internal and external obliques. Yet they're hardly mentioned in any bodybuilding books.
Well, isn't that because bodybuilding is mostly about how you look as opposed
right.
to function?
Right, it's about mirror muscles. And one of the principles of my power program is to train the inner muscles first, the mirror muscles last.
I like that term, mirror muscle.
Yeah.
Now, I understand you've got another new book coming out. If is it out already?
No, it's not. It's it actually, from the publishing arrangements, it's actually being published in German in Europe before it's coming out here. The Europeans eclipsed the American publisher, so they have the rights to publish it first.
Now, it's about the brain, is it not?
Yes, it's called Brain Power. It's really the next big step in power for athletes, and it is also probably the most important book I've written, because it talks about degeneration of the brain, and the brain is the organ which controls every single thing in your body.
So that's the PowerPoint, the brain.
Yes. For athletic performance, it controls, first of all, the acquisition of skilled movement, which, as you know from your hammer-throwing expertise, is very difficult to acquire and takes an inordinate amount of time. And the more efficiently your brain will do it, the better you will be. And that's one of the keys we work on. The second thing is the speed of your action, which, of course, is the main element for power. The speed is absolutely controlled by the central nervous system. And we know now that you can, by working on manipulating brain function, increase that speed. One of the reasons that people lose their reaction time as they age is the brain starts to get damaged. Reaction time starts to go at about age 35 when the brain damage is actually measurable in almost all of us. So these are key variables, because right now people start getting treated for brain disease such as Alzheimer's, which affects an enormous number of people, so nearly 5 million in the United States, over 500,000 in Canada. They don't start getting treated until the disease is far gone, because it starts, we know, at about age 35. And that's the time to treat it, not when the people are 60 and they've become incapable of looking after themselves.
Now, you've said that nobody dies of old age, but of damage.
That's right. There's no doubt now. I think that most scientists in the aging field, and I've been in it for 28 years, have now come to accept that aging is a matter of damage. It's not a matter of any clock running down in the body. It's a matter of damage. And we know what the mechanisms of damage are, and we know that they are principally centered about the mitochondrion of the cell, where the most free radicals are produced in the energy transfer. Recently, in the last 4 to 5 years, we learned a lot about correcting, or at least preventing a lot of that damage. Correcting a little of it, but preventing a lot of it.
Now, outside of exercising and optimum nutrition for health, in a practical sense, what are some of the supplements that you recommend that we can take to protect the brain?
Okay, well, this here again, I have to... The general level of knowledge in the health food industry and amongst the public is such that we have to do a bit of a retake here. A lot of people, for example, believe in antioxidants, and they think vitamin C and vitamin E, etc., will, you know, protect them and increase their lifespan and protect them from various diseases. And to an extent, that's true. But vitamin C and vitamin E and all the common nutrient antioxidants cannot get to the mitochondrion. They cannot get into the cell. And it is at the mitochondrion that most damage occurs. In my book, I go into the 4 stages of mitochondrial decay that occur in every one of us and what it takes to prevent them. The first thing you have to do, it's all Denman Harmon's fault, really, because in the 1950s, he introduced the free radical theory of aging, and most scientists leapt upon it. And thousands of experiments later where vitamin C and vitamin E and pycnogenol and other things had failed completely to slow down aging, everybody thought he was wrong. And it wasn't until the 1972 that he first said, no, it's really not any... I've come to understand now, it's all at the mitochondrion. And just about the turn of the millennium, scientists have come to accept that the new theory, which is the mitochondrial free radical theory of aging. And that's where the key is. You've got to find nutrients that actually work at the mitochondrion and can get into the cell, nutrients that are natural metabolites. One of those is alpha-lipoic acid, which is why it's risen to prominence, except that fortunately most of the alpha-lipoic acid being sold is a racemic mixture of synthetic S- and R+ lipoic acid, and it's only the R+ form, the R+ isomer, that occurs in nature. So most of the supplements have been useless. But that's I explain all that in the book. But that's one mitochondrial metabolite that works very well. Another one is acetyl L-carnitine. It has to be the acetylated form of L-carnitine in order to get into the cell. A third one is adiponone, which is a derivative of coenzyme Q10. So there are, and in the book, I give a complete program step by step for improving brain function.
So the key is to get the book and just follow the guidelines.
I think so, because it is complicated in that there are some things you can use and some things you have to be careful about. But
right.
If you're going to do a brain program, you have to really do the whole hog. You can't do part of the game, because it's a bit like people saying, well, I take vitamin E. Now, if a person just takes vitamin E, then they're probably doing their body more harm than good, because vitamin E itself produces what are called tocopheroxyl radicals when it interacts with free radicals. And those have got to be then quenched by something else, and something else, and something else. The whole chain has got to work together until you take the damaging molecules and you turn them into carbon dioxide, which you can then breathe out, and water, which the body can then reuse. And that's a long chain. And most people have not understood that. That's why some scientists are radically against the use of antioxidants, because they understand, as you learn in biochemistry, that what we're talking about is the redox potential of the body. We're not talking about oxidant and antioxidant. We're talking about balance.
And there's that key word, balance.
Yeah.
So we've talked about quality and now balance, my favorite two words in health. I guess that's the mandate for all of us as we move forward in time.
It is. I believe so. It's quality. There is where your diet and your exercise and everything should be, not quantity. Quality.
Now, Michael, I know you've got a new e-newsletter. I've received it a couple of times.
And oh, right.
You've got so much to offer in the field of sports nutrition. How can our listeners get more information about the Colgan Institute, your products, clinics, seminars, and the Colgan Power Program exercise equipment? We didn't talk about that, but you've got a whole new line of equipment too, don't you?
Right, because the Power Program demanded it. When I started teaching them, we started teaching the Power Program seminars all around the world. People said, yes, but I can't do that at my gym because they don't have the gear. So I actually developed the gear, and now we sell it worldwide. But that's a whole other thing. But you can get all the information off our website, which is www.colganinstitute.com, or you can call us at 250-653-2073.
Very good. Okay, so that's www.colganinstitute.com,
right,
or 1-250-653-2073.
Yeah.
Now, Michael, thanks so much for taking the time to share your expertise on this edition of SNU. It's wonderful always to take the opportunity to get into your mind. Do you have any final special words of advice for our listeners today?
Only with regard to the SARS epidemic.
Good one.
Improve your immunity. Look at my books on raising immunity. And also go on to the web and go into Entree PubMed, EntrezPubMed, and you get the National Medical Library, and look up immune stimulants. Especially, you could look at beta-glucan from oats. Beta, BETA GLUCAN, glucan, which is a strong immune stimulant.
So strengthen the immune system. Keep it strong.
It is host resistance that is the key to whether you get any of these things.
So it's one thing to protect the brain, but it's another thing to use it. With that being said, Mike, thanks very much. It's always great to have a chat. Really enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Okay. Bye, Corey.
Bye-bye.
This concludes this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. We hope you have enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview. SNU is a monthly audio publication and is a division of Holly Health Services, the world's number one provider of resources in sports nutrition education. For more information or to subscribe to SNU, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free at 1-866-922-2229. This is Lisa Hawley, wishing you the very best of health and wellness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.